Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to Sarah Barrington, CEO of Verici DX, a leading developer of diagnostics that are used to help care of pre and post kidney transplant patients. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Delighted to be back.
Yeah, well, big congrats on today's positive interims. And it does seem as though all the hard work over the last 2 years is really starting to bear fruit in terms of the sort of the validation test of the validation trial of the two leading tests, the Tutiva and Clarava. And perhaps we can start there. If you could just walk us through, we'll take one diagnostic at a time, perhaps starting with the Tutiva. If you just walk through the sort of the significance of the sort of the validation test data and what, you know, sort of what improvements it, how it helps the sort of the clinicians, and how much more sort of like accurate and beneficial is it than the current standard of care?
Yeah, thanks. Tutiva is the post-transplant. It's looking for early stage MI. And if I can take a step back, remember, we our entire platform is based on this idea of RNA signatures. RNA signatures answer a very specific clinical question. And Tutiva was answering the question is damage happening and does the clinician need to intervene? And that's why the PPV, was so important. Currently, clinicians have biomarkers that will tell them that they don't have to do anything. That's an MPV, a rule out test. But what they really know that is about half of the organs are going to have a damage event. That doesn't mean they're going to fail. It just means they're having an event and they need to sort through and work out which of those the body is going to be able to deal with itself and which they need to intervene. So they're looking for actionable data. And that's a PPV story. So when we were focusing in on this, we realized that the RNA signature is very personalized to the body. It's about the what messages the body, the patient is telling the clinician, very dynamic, but also very personalized. And information translated to the clinician in an actionable, very strong on saying, yes, something's happening and yes, you need to intervene, is the information that clinicians were looking for. They need to know how to sort of be more directed in how they treat their patients.
So just take that as an example. Let's just hypothetically say I'm Dr. Hill out in Los Angeles or in New York, etc. And I've got a kidney transplant patient who's just come through, and I get a result from this test, and it says it's a positive. Will it actually what sort of actionable insight will it give me? Assuming that this patient may, I don't know, may be on immunosuppressants to help the acceptance or whatever like that, what will it tell me to do, or what will it allow me to make a decision on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very important for us to say that this adds to their judgment. They look at all clinical factors, you know, and our performance was without the integration of other things in their judgment. But what they're looking for is, at the moment, they're kind of running a little bit blind. And so they don't know if damages is happening. What they will know is, has it happened? And they're kind of late to the party. As you know, in all kind of diagnostics, earlier is better. So what this does is it helps them segregate their patients into those that are likely to be having a rejection event that they need to intervene. And if they can get there early, they've got a raft of immunosuppressants, steroids, other, so even dietary kind of honing in. There's multiple things that they can, you know, levers that they can pull, but they need the information to know that they need to act now. And that's what they need. And it's a value equation for the patient as well, don't forget. Not only with the clinician, but patients need to know. If I'm taking steroids, I want to know. You hear this loud and clear from the community. I want to know it's worthwhile, right? And they need to know that, yes, you're doing this to save your organ. And you're trying to get ahead of the problem, not try and, you know, be on the back foot trying to treat it.
Right. Okay. So effectively, if I'm a sort of like an organ transplant patient, and essentially there is on the existing test, it comes up as a positive, then the doctor at the moment will just hit me with everything. It may decide to hit me with everything. Whereas you guys can actually say, the Tativa test will be able to say, is it something that the body is going to be able to accept, or is it something I need to sort of like change the treatment?
Yeah, so the Tativa test is designed, it uses those biological pathways as well. Yeah. So included in the signature is cell repair, cell metabolism. And so therefore, if it's coming up with a positive result, it's indicating that the intervention's needed. You know, again, we can't tell the clinician what to do. Or what is prescribed. We can just give them another piece of information and they'll use their best judgment in terms of their therapeutic choices. But, you know, essentially in this field, there is a lack of information. Yeah. And so you need these this information and information you can trust. Mm. I mean, one of the things that has come out in terms of looking at our study was that we designed it in a way that would reflect clinical reality, right? What are you going to see in your clinic? What we didn't do is we didn't sort of, you know, pick out bits and subgroups and whatever. We made it very, very blindly applicable to the clinic. So they know that when they're using our test, it's been tested in an environment that is like their clinic, right? It isn't an artificial situation. So I want to be very clear that this was something that the market, you know, the clinical market was asking for, and we delivered on that, and we delivered well.
Yeah, so it's real world testing. So putting all that together with the positive PPV test, etc., given you was presented all the data at the American Organ Transplant Conference, I think back in June or July or something like over the summer anyway, what's the sort of been response from the industry, from doctors who have sort of, you know, your classic sort of transplant doctors?
Yeah, very well. You know, it was highlighted at the end of the conference in the What's New, What's Great, or I can't remember what the session was called, but, you know, one of these What to Watch sessions. So that was satisfying. You know, that's a hugely competitive spot there. So we got a shout out there. Obviously, we are talking to clinicians in the field. You know, looking to do what we call our soft launch, you know, effectively work out all the logistics, make sure that we don't trip ourselves up in the mature launch. So we've got a good reception there. And also we actually have got a speaking slot at ASN's Kidney Week as well. And again, that was quite, you know, a competitive situation. So, you know, what we do know is the clinical community is seeing this as an important addition to the biomarker story. And I think, you know, really it pulls us at the forefront of being able to commercially launch. This is designed in a way that they wanted to see. It gives the answer in a way that they want to see. And I think there's a high degree of interest in that.
Yeah. So that's a big tick in the box on Tutiva. Now, equally, you've just done a separate RNS for the Clarava as well, which is again has come through sort of like its validation test with flying colours. Do you want to talk us through that one? Because as I understand, it's a pre-organ transplant test that allows doctors, gives them better information for, again, immediate treatment regimes straight on, sort of like just when they've done the organ transplant.
Yeah. So pre-transplant, at the moment, they've got no information. Mm. You know, they have these broad clinical factors, which are, they don't perform very well, let's put it that way, and they're not used. So what happens is that this is a completely novel test. And it answers a very simple or apparently very simple clinical question, which is how aggressive or benign is the patient's immune system likely to be in the event of a transplant, right? So it sounds very simple, but the impact is quite significant. And what that does is that gives the clinician an ability to discriminate their patient population and therefore start tailoring the therapy modulation, right? So at the moment, and Barbara always used to, and I think I've heard this many times, the clinical community say we've got a one-size-fits-all protocol, and we know that doesn't work. That leads to, basically we know we over-immunosuppress. We have this like huge thing, we pull it back, and then we say, oh, did damage happen? Were we ready to pull it down? Nobody wants that. What they want is more information to know how the patient is likely to respond. And so what you'll find is people that they might have thought were high risk may end up being low risk, and therefore you can pull down that therapeutic level earlier and more safely. Or you may have a situation where it's high risk, you weren't expecting that, in which case, again, it's this value proposition for the patient and the clinician. They know that it's worthwhile being on that high level of therapeutic option for longer, because they need, you know, they'll need that time. Their body needs that time to adjust to the new organ. So I think that's, you know, very complex in its information and therefore the subsequent treatment.
Mm. And given it's had sort of really positive sort of like results so far, you've decided also then to sort of further enrich the data, have you? What can you just take us through, you know, what the rationale is behind that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very exciting to see the success of the test, but we recognize it's also in a novel area, and more data is always, preferable. And we have the option. So we talk to our advisors. And knowing that we had our clinical trial still open for Protega and the ability to take each patient's, essentially blood and do multiple things with it, we decided that we could very quickly and easily expand that data set. Now, why is that important? When you're looking at all the pathways, you know, reimbursement, publications, data acceptance, more is always better. And if you can do that for quickly, you will. And that's what we decided to do. We have a very successful test. We want to give it the very best chance for that rapid adoption. And its novelty, which I think is hugely exciting, also means that you want to support it in that foundational way as much as you can. And that's what we've decided to do. It's a testament to its success, quite frankly.
Yeah. And how long is it likely to take to sort of enrich this in terms of, you know, more data and potential further application areas and adoption?
Yeah, I mean, broadly speaking, we're talking about another 6 months. That's what I mean. Why wouldn't you? You know, if you have a successful test, you give it the very best data set you can. And we've got an option to do that, to hand. And I think, you know, very importantly, it doesn't slow us down in other commercial things. We're still going through the pricing conversations. We're still setting ourselves up for those vignettes in terms of the utility work. Those can all be sort of marching on as well, because it takes a while to set those things up. I don't know that it slows us down enormously. 6 months is not a lot in this kind of field anyway. These broader sets are so important to the clinical community. Yeah. I think it's very worthwhile.
Yeah. So given you've got sort of like two shots on goal there, which is both just scored, which is yeah, great news. I mean, they're massive on their own sort of potential value catalyst. But then together, I mean, I'm just sort of like putting my investor's hat on to have sort of like, as I say, two diagnostics that have both sort of like come through pretty onerous validation trial conditions in the real world, and come through not only as a positive result but with flying colours. I mean, that sort of says to me as an investor, as a sort of like a, you know, an analyst in the medical industry, that you're starting to sort of, you've built this sort of like this platform that, of science that is has got multiple potential, you know, diagnostics or usages going forward as well.
You're completely right. You know, we've always said we'll launch as individual tests, but this actually is a platform play. Yeah. And it's clear that this is a very lucrative and productive clinically platform and technology. RNA signatures are hugely exciting, right? And for us to have been able to push two products already over the finish line into sort of clinical adoption, rather than just, you know, cutting edge technology, I think it's hugely exciting. But mostly it's very exciting in terms of the future and being able to say this is a platform play, right? This is not just, you know, onesie doozy tests. This is actually a whole wave of tests that will be coming behind this. And not only in transplant. You know, we said we'll start in kidney transplant. We've said we'll do the proof of the pudding, which I think we have now done. We'll prove it commercially, which we will do, and we are currently doing. And then you say, okay, well, actually, your growth after that becomes exponential because people really buy into actually the validity of this platform. And the interest in this area is growing enormously because it's sort of starting to realize the promise of personalized diagnostics. This is very much about RNA signatures and asking of, you know, a patient's body, what are you trying to tell me? Right. And that's the eternal conundrum for the clinician. What are you trying to tell me here? And these diagnostics are very dynamic. They're very personalized and they answer very specific questions out of a wealth of data. I mean, we will keep talking about the data we're collecting and all the RNA signatures that you can derive from that. And we'll move out, you know, long term, we'll move way out of transplants and into other disease groups. Got to hold my horses for now. I've got to do it methodically, right? But I can see that long-term future. And, you know, I think the fact that we've got two successful tests is testament to really how powerful this platform is. And, you know, quite frankly, endorses what is a 10-year, you know, in the making, all this technology from Barbara Murphy's, you know,
original work.
Lab. Sorry, I couldn't find the word there. You know, all of her work, she was working on this a decade with the, you know, in conjunction with NIH. I think it's very encouraging that this is now really being pushed into the clinic. Not many tests get that opportunity, and this does. This is going to be a very successful platform.
Yeah, you're definitely talking my language now in terms of, because I mean, we've had in therapeutics, we've had sort of immunotherapies which have been put into sort of the cancer, but we're still in the diagnostics, immunodiagnostics is still a long way away. And it's that whole personalized medicine, tailoring the particular treatment to the particular patient and then maximizing the outcomes and the healthcare benefits. So here's a tricky question for you, actually, Sarah. What is the addressable what's the addressable market for this platform? For this, if we just broadly for the two sort of, you know, the diagnostics and then sort of like, you know, what sort of share would you sort of like look to get perhaps in the US and then also sort of the timescales for broadening it out to the, you know, hopefully to the UK, because we need those tests here.
I love addressable market questions, as you know, because it's all like pie in the sky and how do you calculate it? We, you know, when we looked at our platform with the three tests, we just said, okay, what does this look like with the three tests? We said it's about 5 billion over 5 years.
Oh, right. So it's pretty small then.
No, just a little bit. But, you know, honestly, that's just in kidney transplants, three tests over 5 years. Okay. But, you know, we're not going to, you know, stop there. So, that sort of exponentially grows as you think about other disease groups. You know, this is not a small market. You know, we start in a very small, considered way. you know, we issue one or two tests, you get your proof of principle, you build upon that. But when it explodes, you know, you can do that huge growth and we can realize that future value. Okay, so what share in the US market when I start off with? You know, we have three competitors that dominate the market right now. And we're not the only ones that are attacking that. But I think, you know, with the success on these two, onto Tivia, we should be able to dislodge quite a substantial percentage of each of those three. So that should amount to, you know, I fully intend to be a major player in the US. Watch out, world.
Good. Okay. Well, that's
But you know, we won't stop there, Paul. We will go into Europe, but it all takes time. You know, healthcare never adopts new technology, you know, overnight, and we don't want it to. You know, healthcare is patients' healthcare. They need to be moderate, and it needs to be step by step. So as we go through this, we've always said we will do this in a considered way, in partnership with clinicians and building their trust on this. That's why we said this year we will only do a soft launch so that we understand all of those kind of hiccups that you have in healthcare, like where's my test result and things like that. And, you know, gain the credibility with the clinicians. We very much look to partner with clinicians, not necessarily just, you know, throw stuff at them.
Yeah, okay. That probably explains why super smart life science investor Christopher Mills loves it, because I know Verici, because I've spoken to him a few times. Now, just on that third test, Protege, you'll take us through how you're envisaging that, because do we still need to do a validation study on it?
Yes, it's always been our long term, and quite frankly, you don't want to be trying to launch, you know, all your tests at the same time. It doesn't work that way. The market would just get confused. So I'm not unhappy with the fact that this is our longer term play. And the reason for that is that effectively what we're doing in our validation trial is we're having a 2-year follow up. Now, there may be sort of, you know, signposts along the way that give you an indication on how it's performing. But, you know, realistically, because it's about long-term damage, you need that long-term endpoint as your comparator to really sort of, you know, support that out in clinical adoption. So that's what it is. We're still going through accruing patients, but we're sort of coming towards the end of that. And once we do that, then you kick off the, okay, you know, it's 2 years from there.
Good. Okay. Well, and then just finally, I did see you. You managed all that sort of validation, and you managed to also sneak in a collaboration stroke partnership with a very small sort of like genetic sequencing company called Illumina, which is the world's biggest, which is a massive endorsement, obviously, of the platform and the immuno and the RNA technology you own. Can you just talk us through the sort of clinical significance of what you're trying to do, and perhaps illustrate it with an example of how this is going to sort of like benefit patients?
Yeah, so our test is, you know, basically what we do is we use the sequencing, we do the entire transcriptome, and then through our AI and our algorithms, what we do is we interrogate that to pull out the signature of interest, right? And to be able to manage that, you need effectively, it's both a physical test and what they call a software test. You know, and there's that sort of end part. Now, to be able to host that in a very controlled and scalable way, we use the platform of ICA. And Illumina were incredibly excited about that, because they want to move much more out of just having research products, and they want to be in the clinic. And we're one of the first that has pushed that platform through into a clinical setting. So much so they flagshipped us as a good case study for them. And I think that this is really important to understand how, when you're, you know, that transfer of cutting edge technology into the clinic and clinical adoption for them is something that they can then scale, not only with us, but with others. And so it was a very important collaboration for us, and it was a very important collaboration for them. I think, you know, we're going to build upon that. Now, that environment, which is clinically robust, and obviously that's really important, it's also important in how you launch to the rest of the world and still meet those data requirements. So when you ask about the UK, you ask about Europe, obviously data protection and how you handle your data and within national boundaries is something that we can do in conjunction with this platform. They've worked out how to basically give it national boundaries. And if you're working in the data field, that's very, very important for clinical adoption across the world. So that's why we were really excited about it. And that's why they're very excited that they can push clinically with content. We're the content. They're the provider. And so together we're working out how to do that. It's also important in the research. As I said, we have a lot of data. I always talk about our research asset being like, you know, we can hold it into effectively like a Dropbox, you know, tidy files, but not great for collaboration in a safe environment. By using their platform, we build out a research asset so that we can, you know, pick up the speed of and pace of vision with others. Because you're in an environment where basically everyone can go in there and operate securely and professionally, quite frankly. So, you know, for us, it had a twofold importance to be able to validate on this platform. And, you know, for Illumina, I think it showed that they could move and operate in the clinical setting. And obviously, they're always got an eye on expansion worldwide.
So this is basically allowing probably a faster adoption of the technology because you're taking your data but putting it onto their platform to be able to then deliver it to people who could use it more.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's you've got to have one eye on really the robustness of your offering, you know, the security. If you're trying to say, look, you can trust our product, you have to partner in a way that it becomes self-evidently a trustworthy product. And I think that's really what it does, is it reassures people that it's not just, you know, an unknown quantity here, but a very real and big partner there.
Now, just moving on to the just very quickly onto sort of the cash position. Obviously, you did a successful placing earlier in the year, and I think I can't remember exactly what your current cash position is, but I think you burnt through about just under 5 million in the first half, etc.
Yeah, when we did that raise, we said it would take us through to August of 23. We're now extending that. You know, obviously, this is flavor of the day, which is to look at your cash conserving and extension of runway. And you know, we're to the end of 23 now. You know, obviously we're being very thoughtful and considered, and I don't want to slow everything down to the point where you're just burning through cash for no reason, but you know, we're not running out. We've got our commercial team in place, and they've got a very clear remit, which is really understand what you're doing and getting into that mature launch before we expand that team, for example. And then that way you don't run the risk of wasting resources or making mistakes or having people, you know, not fully utilized. So we're giving that a lot of thought in terms of how we extend our runway and make sure that everything is considered and, you know, all geared towards the increased valuation of the company.
Good. Okay. Well, just on the sort of future news flow, what sort of investors do you think are going to be may look forward to in the next sort of like 6 to 12 months? I mean, obviously, you're going to have you're going to be doing the validation study of the Clarava, et cetera, and hopefully making a few early sales of Tutiva at the back end of the year.
Yeah, my priority really is behind Tutiva. What we need to do is that commercial launch. We need to do it well. We need, I don't mind it's considered and well thought out, but I want to do it well. And I think that we'll see announcements all around, you know, how we progress that into the marketplace. And, you know, that's got to be our focus right now. We're moving into revenue generation, and that's hugely exciting. That's the transition of the company this year. And that's what we need to focus in on.
Yeah. Well, big congrats on excellent validation study results. I mean, absolutely, as I say, they're massive on their own value catalysts, and it underpins, certainly as from an external perspective, the quality of the science, the depth of the science, and the applicability into the medical community, and the kidney transplant just being the very first as well. So look forward in hearing how the business progresses. So thanks very much, Sarah.
Thanks, Paul. Great talking.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.